So recently I was, I guess the real place to start the story is I wake up at about 6 in the morning every single morning now. That's not what I used to do at all. But I have a almost 9-month-old, and he's like a little involuntary alarm clock is basically how that works. And so a lot of times Christina and I, we wake up in the morning and we're just like too tired to be like fully present with Caleb because he's like a really energetic little kid. So we try to come up with anything to kind of distract him. And so one of the things that we've been coming up with is Planet Earth is on Netflix. And so we will put Planet Earth up on there, and we'll kind of like, as we're like trying to drink our coffee and recover and get up to speed with where Caleb's already at, we'll be watching that. And you got to be careful about Planet Earth because it seems like a happy show up until the moment that it's not. And so, like, if you're having a good day, it's okay to watch it. But if you're already kind of in an angsty mood, and you watch that show, it'll get you. And so, like, a couple of days ago, we're watching it, and there's little baby turtles that have just hatched out of their little shells, and they're doing that cute little, like, waddle thing down the beach to the water. It looks just like that. And so they're doing their cute little, and then, like, David Attenborough with his really classy British voice comes on there, and he's like, sadly, not all of these turtles will make it. You're like, oh, no, what's going to happen to the turtles? He's like, many of these turtles will drown. And then as that happens, this wave comes and hits the baby turtles, and they're flying all over the place. I'm like, how do they even drown? They're made for the water, but somehow, and I'm just sitting there, I'm like, the poor baby turtles, this is not a just universe. What is wrong with this? And so I'm already feeling, this is a true story, all this is 100% true, so I'm already kind of has this, like, angsty, the universe is a cold place kind of vibe going on, and I am, I'm driving back home, and I'm right here at the corner of Colorado and Ellenwood. I'm pulling up to the light, and as I do that, I swear to you, a bird just slams into my windshield, flips over my car, and is like, it's in the street behind me. And I look in my rearview mirror, and I can see the poor little thing, like, kind of flapping around a little bit. I'm like, what do I do? Can I go get it? And cars are, like, almost hitting it. And as I'm thinking, what do I do for this poor little bird? I was saved from my dilemma of what to do because a crow came up and started pecking at it. And I was like, God, what are you doing to me? And it was just a bad day for all of that stuff. And I, like, and so, like, I'm in this place where I'm like, the universe is like, yeah, it's a cold and cruel and everything's out to get you and you always have to be careful. And, like, a lot of the reasons for that is because, like, you just can't watch the news without kind of getting into a bad place lately. And so, like, the stuff, like, it used to be Ferguson and now it's Baltimore, and I can't take it. And I can't take it because, like, it's not just, it's bad enough that all of that stuff is happening and that it's a tragedy. It's that the only way we as a society apparently know how to deal with it is to yell and blame each other for it. And you look at, like, Nepal and the tragedy that happened over there, and there's droughts and there's poverty. And then, like, you get closer to home, and, like, anytime I start thinking too much about our foster care system here in LA and the 10,000 kids that are in it, I just, like, something in me just, like, shuts down. And I think when we're honest about the world that we live in, when we're honest about our universe, when we really look at it honestly, I think one of the things that we have to conclude is that it doesn't feel sometimes like justice is coming very swiftly. It doesn't seem sometimes like the things that should happen, that are supposed to happen, are the things that actually happen. And so sometimes this is true, like, in our own lives, right? You know, for some of you, I mean, for especially, let me talk to you who are single here tonight. Being single is really tough sometimes. And, like, we married people kind of get on our high horses and forget a little bit, like, ah, it's the best time of your lives, and say really dumb things like that. But it's, like, it's really hard, right? Because, like, there's this part of you that wants love, that wants companionship, and you're, like, trying, and you're waiting, and you're hoping, will this be the right person? And it just seems sometimes like rejection after rejection after rejection happens. And you're like, was it so wrong for me just to want to be loved? And it seems like that completion, that rightness is far from coming. And for some of you, it's, you know, you stepped out of college thinking you're going to jump into that job, and the job market's been terrible, or the job you thought you wanted isn't the job that's really satisfying. For some of you, finances have just been this constant struggle. I feel like I had a lot of conversations with people just in the last couple of weeks who are like, they have that grin sort of slapped on their face, like, all is well, I'm fine. But then you start talking, they're like, I don't really know where the next paycheck's coming from. And there's this part of you that's thinking, it's like, I'm trying to do all the right things. I'm trying to do all the stuff I'm supposed to do to get this career, to have this job, to have this life. And it doesn't seem like the universe, like God, like whatever is coming through for you. For some of you, it's sickness and pain, either your own sickness or the sickness of a loved one and someone that you've been praying for days, weeks, months, years. And it just doesn't seem like it's getting better. For some of you, life just feels so overwhelming. Like every day you have this to-do list, and it seems like you go to bed with like a bunch of stuff that didn't get done, and then just as much of the same to-do list the next day with that stuff added on, and it just feels like you're losing, like you're getting buried, like you're falling behind, and you're wondering, like, when is help, is rest, is peace going to come? And I think for those of us who are Christians, there's a dilemma that we kind of fall into, because for some of us here tonight, we pray about this stuff all the time and it doesn't seem to be changing. I wasn't planning on starting this series this way. I wasn't planning on the first talk you heard about prayer to start in this place. But to be honest, as I started thinking about prayer and as I thought about the story that we're going to be looking at tonight, I couldn't help but think that one of the realities that we have to talk about first is, like, does prayer even really work? Or is this just some sort of good idea that we have that might eventually play out for us if we try hard enough, if we can just figure out the right formula? Because a lot of times in our lives, we spend time praying and, like, believing there's a God who's supposed to love me, who's supposed to come through. And so I'm praying to this God about this thing, and it just doesn't seem like he's anywhere. Where is he at? And so tonight we're going to look at a story from the Bible that's going to be talking about this subject. And to be honest, this is a story that when I first read it, I really enjoyed. And then as I dug into it, it kind of created an angsty tension inside of me. And so tonight I want to walk you through some of my journeys through this. And we'll have this, it's in your notes. So actually, if you want to grab your notes and pull it out, you'll see in there, Luke 18 is what we're going to be looking at. And says this: one day Jesus told his disciples a story to show that they should always pray and never give up. There was a judge in a certain city, he said, who neither feared God nor cared about people, and a widow of that city came to him repeatedly saying, "Give me justice in this dispute with my enemy." And so for a second, we're going to stop our story there. So we have this widow in the story that Jesus is telling. And a widow in this culture and time, like, this isn't widows like widows are now. If you're a widow now, yes, that's sad and terrible, but, like, there is opportunities for you that are out there. You can get a career, you can get a job, you can explore more education. In this culture, if you're a widow, you are effectively shut out of all of that. You can't own land, you're probably not going to be able to get a job. There's really no way for you to financially provide for yourself unless you manage to find another husband. And so in that culture, widows are the people who are completely shut out of the justice of the Roman Empire. They're the forgotten. And so we don't know what happened in this widow's story that Jesus is telling. We know that she has an accuser. She has someone who is attacking her. We have someone who is creating tension in her life, and that it's serious enough that she decides the only chance that I have to make this right is for me to go to the judge. The problem is this judge, not a good guy. The way he is described, and you'll see it here, said, who neither fears God nor cares about people. Like, if I described someone to you that way, you'd be like, I would like to avoid that person. They sound surly. I don't know, surly, why not? And so this judge is not a good judge. So not only does this widow have a problem because she's already kind of shut out and the outcast of society, but now that her human rights are being violated, the chances of her finding justice even from this judge are pretty small, because this judge is corrupt. The justice in the universe is turned against this widow. And this would have resonated with Jesus' audience because they knew what it was like to live in an unjust system. most of these people were Jewish people trying to find their way in the middle of a Roman Empire that was at best indifferent and at worst actively hostile to their way of life. And so Jesus goes on with the story. He says, the judge ignored her for a while, but finally he said to himself, I don't fear God or care about people. I'm glad he re-summarized that for us in case we forgot. But this woman is driving me crazy. I'm going to see that she gets justice because she is wearing me out with her constant requests. And I think this is supposed to be funny to Jesus' audience, the fact that there's this widow who's so persuasive and so just annoying that she eventually even gets this judge to finally be like, all right, whatever you want, just go away. I mean, she's like there everywhere that he's at, she's there. Whenever he's out playing golf, she's there. Whenever he sits down to eat, she's there. He comes out of the bathroom, she's just awkwardly sitting there like, it's like everywhere that this judge goes, she's sitting there waiting for him. She doesn't let up. And eventually this judge, who's a bad guy, does not care about God, does not care about people, is so annoyed by her badgering that he's finally like, fine, whatever you want, just please go away. And then as the story is wrapped up by Jesus, he says this, so learn a lesson from this unjust judge. And I should say, up to this point in the story, I'm tracking with it, I'm rolling with it, I like this story. Here's where I started to have a problem with it. So the judge rendered a just decision in the end. So don't you think God will surely give justice to his chosen people who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will grant justice to them quickly. And it was that quickly word that got me. Because like if you've read other parts of the Bible, like Job, like you get the fact. It's like sometimes bad things happen to good people and there's not a lot of explanation, but our hope is that God is good in the middle of it. But like quick is not a part of Job's story. There's a lot of other times when you look at the writing of Paul all throughout the New Testament, he talks about suffering being like kind of a foregone conclusion that you have to patiently persevere through that. So I'm fine with that. I get the idea of the fact that we live in a broken world. But like when Jesus says like that the justice will come quickly, there's this part of me, to be honest, and I'm just talking to you about my journey as I was preparing for this talk. There's a part of me that feels like God is making a promise that he has no intention of delivering on. It bugs me. And it bugs me in part because like I get really upset whenever like religious or spiritual figurehead leaders get in front of people and like sell them this thing that says, if you just do this and this and this, then all of your problems will go away. And we've talked about this some here before, but like there's a lot, especially here in Los Angeles, there's a lot of spiritual ideas that float around this idea that if you just like send good energy into the universe, or if you just do a handful of the right things, if you're more or less a good person, then it'll get returned to you. And that's just, it's garbage. That's not the universe that we live in. We live in a universe that sometimes is unfair. We live in a universe where bad things happen to people who are trying their best to be good. And to be honest, like this stuff in my life that I'm looking at, and it's like I've been praying for it for a while, and it just seems like God isn't coming through on it, that he's not answering that prayer. And so I feel like I know that like this problem and the spectrum of problems is kind of small, but like, you know how it is. It's like your stuff is still your stuff and it gets to you over time. And so like for Christina and I with Caleb, since Caleb was born, basically, he's had eczema constantly and he's had digestive problems. And both of those things have kept him from sleeping well at night. And so when night after night after night, this little kid's not sleeping well, that like, it's emotional torture. It just wears on you over time, right? And this poor kid, I feel bad for him because like when his eczema gets really triggered and upset, he gets really itchy and miserable. There's times at night where he's just so, so uncomfortable that he can't even go to sleep. And like Christina and I have prayed for him every night. Like, God, would you make the eczema go away? Would you make the eczema go away? And we're 9 months into that prayer, basically, and it still hasn't been answered. And so I read this passage where it says quickly, and I'm like, really? Because I feel like Jesus in the story says, like, God's not like the judge and you're not like the widow. But in my life, that's kind of how it feels. I feel like I'm the widow trying to badger God for something, hoping that he'll eventually come through. And yet the point of the story is supposed to be it's not like that. So what is going on? What do we do with the times that justice feels far away, that prayers don't seem to be answered? I guess I kind of felt like the story was wrapping it up too easily. And so as I was wrestling with this and trying to figure it out, I landed on something that kind of helped me look at it a little bit of a different direction. If you look at the front end and the back end of the story, the very first verse and the last verse, the first verse says this: one day Jesus told his disciples a story to show that they should always pray and never give up. And then the very last verse says, but when the Son of Man returns, how many will he find on the earth who have faith? And as I was reading those two sentences, here's what hit me. That in this story, we're being told that God gets that this is not easy. So it starts with saying, so Jesus tells them a story about how they should pray and not give up. You know why you tell a story like that? Because there are people who are praying and want to give up. That's why you tell the story like that. And at the end of it, it says, but when the Son of Man, which is how Jesus referred to himself sometimes, returns, says, how many will he find on earth who have faith? And I think the point is the same at the end of that sentence, is that what we're being called into in this story is not easy. That God knows that this isn't easy. That we're being told this because God knows what our situation is like. He knows that from our perspective, it seems like justice, like rightness, like answered prayers are coming slowly. That believing in a just God in the middle of an unjust world is not something for the weak. That it takes work. That it takes perseverance. Matter of fact, I would say like this, that prayer, and this is one of the fill-ins in your notes, prayer is an act of faith. We'll have this up on the screen as well. Prayer is an act of faith. It's believing the justice of God will ultimately defeat the injustice of our world. That prayer is an act of faith. It's believing the justice of God will ultimately defeat the injustice of our world. When we pray, what we're doing is we're being invited into believing that there is more to our world than just what we see around us. One of the major themes of the Bible and one of the major themes we see in our life is that the systems of this world, the power systems of this world are broken. And so when we look at the world around us, which is all we see, when we look at our jobs, when we look at our relationships, when we look at our government, when we look at how the way the world is interacting with each other, what we see is brokenness and hurt and pain. And it's so easy for us to get caught up into everyday reality that we look around at us and all we can see is bad, 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 bad. And what prayer does is it's an act of faith that calls us to believe that there's a God who exists outside of that world and that our hope for justice does not come from some internal broken system, but from a God who's outside of it. And the second thing I would say is this, is that prayer produces faith. That prayer produces faith. It reassures us our Father is both all-loving and all-powerful. It says this in 2 Thessalonians. We'll have this up on the screen. It says, may the Lord lead your hearts into a full understanding and expression of the love of God and the patient endurance that comes from Christ. In this verse, it says, may the Lord lead. That as we come into an interaction with God, that he's leading us from a place. He's leading us from this place where it seems like there are no answers, like there is no hope. And he leads us out of that into an endurance that comes from Christ. That what happens as we go to God in prayer is that we start experiencing the love and the power of God. We start sensing it. We start interacting with it. And it calls us into a further belief that there is a God out there who is going to act. I think the message of the story, and really the message of the lot of the Bible, is this. It's God saying to us, can you believe even in the middle of a world that seems to be saying otherwise? Can you believe that I love you? Can you believe that I care about you? Can you hold on even when it seems like I'm nowhere to be found? I think this is kind of hard for me and us to believe because we really trust what we see and feel, right? Like what we see and feel determines our reality in a lot of ways. And so if we see and feel that things are not right and okay and God's nowhere to be found, that is kind of our reality. But I was thinking about that because that's not necessarily true. I was thinking again about my son Caleb. And that little guy, like I love him. He's so much fun. He's so cute. Like he's so cute. I really enjoy hanging out with him. Sometimes he does not see reality super well though. Like sometimes he gets a little bit hungry. I'm not talking like starving hungry. We feed him regularly. So just like a little bit hungry and he sees the bottle, but then we don't give the bottle directly to him. We like try to recline him before. And in that moment, his brain goes to, I am not getting the food. I am never going to get the food. All is terrible. You are horrible parents. And then this screaming commences. Now, I don't fault him for that. He's 9 months old. It's not his fault. However, his perspective in that moment is a little bit flawed because as a matter of fact, we feed him every single time that he's been hungry. We've come through on the feeding. It's kind of what we do. And the bottle's right there. Does he think we're just toying with him? Be like, it's right here. You can't get it because you can barely crawl. It's like, but we don't do that. Like, we're good parents. We're trying to be good parents. We feed him. And yet, for some reason, in that moment, from Caleb's perspective, all he can see is that there's something that he wants and needs, and it's not coming on his timeline. And what that tells him is like, well, things aren't okay then. And I wonder if from God's perspective, it's kind of the same way. I wonder if from God's perspective, he's seeing the vast story of human experience, and he's seeing this plan that he's telling, and he's seeing the story of our lives, really, the God willing 80 plus years of our lives that we'll live, and he's looking at the long narrative that he's telling on that. And then for those of us who are followers of Jesus and believe in the eternity that we'll spend with him, he's looking at that, and on that timeline is the plan of our life and how he's shaping it. And I wonder if sometimes, even though from our perspective, it makes sense. Even though from our perspective, the pain is real. Even though from our perspective, the sense of loneliness and abandonment is so real. Even from our perspective, that's true. That God is up there saying, if you could see this from my perspective, you'd get, I'm here, I'm coming. It's going to be okay. And I think that's what prayer does for us, guys. I think the reason that prayer is so important, among other reasons, is because it takes us out of our world. It takes us out of our perspective. It takes us out of being chained and enslaved to what we see happening around us. And it invites us to see the bigger picture. It invites us to come and be with a God who says, step back from this. It's all going to be okay. Trust that I have you. But for some of us tonight, and for some of you tonight, what I've said is really hard for you to swallow because you're not just like in this like, yeah, it's been a few months and it's kind of hard. Like you're in years of wondering, is God going to come through? For some of you here tonight, you've experienced some stuff that's really painful and broken. For some of you here tonight, the stuff that you've gone through is stuff that's just in every way not okay. For some of you, you walked away from the faith because you just couldn't reconcile a good God with what you've gone through. For some of you, you're here tonight, and the reason that you're kind of skeptical about faith in the first place is you're like, how could there be a good God in a world like this? I'm not going to pretend to be able to wrap up that answer completely tonight, but I did want to invite a friend of mine here tonight to talk a little bit about this subject. For some of you who have been around our church for a while, you might know Kathy. She is an institution at our church. She has been here for a long, long time. She has a lot of wisdom. I get the privilege of being in an office with her. And in addition to her being very wise and a good person for advice, she's kind of become my office mom. And so since it's Mother's Day and all, I thought that would be a good time to bring her up. So if you guys could welcome Kathy to the stage. Hi there.
Hi.
Is that okay that I called you an institution?
Well, I was thinking that sounded pretty dated, but yeah, it's okay. Yeah. You shouldn't call me your office great grandma. That would have been really insulting. So,
yeah, every day, guys, this is what I get. Kathy, I know a little bit about your story, and specifically, I know that a few years ago, tragedy hit your life in a really, really intense way. First of all, could you tell us a little bit, just for those who don't know, could you just tell us a little bit about what happened?
My husband, Bud, we were married 39 years, and some of it was hard, but God is faithful. And 2 weeks after our 39th anniversary, we had had some great friends to dinner. Bud had cooked. He liked to cook, and he'd been wanting to do this big, fancy, low country boil, they called it. And so we had, it was outside, and we spent the day getting crab legs and shrimp and all the fixings for it. And set it up, and our friends came. It was just a great evening. It was like, for Bud, it was the best of the best. And so he was more of a night owl, so I went to bed. And at about 2:40, he was snoring like a son of a gun, which he didn't really snore that much, and so woke me up. And so really sweetly and gently, I went, "Honey, honey." Or I went like, "Bud, Bud," like this. And it didn't break the rhythm of his snoring. And so I turned over and I said, "Buddy, turn over." And then I looked at him, and he was already on his side, because guys sometimes, I guess women do it too, I don't know. I never snore, so I don't know. But I was like, he was on his side. And then as I pulled on his arm, I realized that he was not responding at all. And so I grabbed the phone, and my daughter was living with me at the time, and so I called 911 and went downstairs to get Anna, and she came back up, and the paramedics and the police station, the fire station, is like 3-4 minutes from my house, and I could already hear the sirens as we were coming upstairs to our room, and the gal on the phone was telling me how to do CPR, so my daughter was doing CPR on her dad. And as I went back down the stairs to open the door for the paramedics, I just heard her saying, "Daddy, please, you talk to me. Daddy, I mean it." And that's something that just stays in my head, because no daughter should have to do that. And so I went down and opened the door, and they came up, and they worked on Buddy for about 20 minutes, I would say. And then sounds stupid to you, but this really nice-looking paramedic came, and Anna and I were sitting down. He kind of knelt in front of us, and he said, "I'm so sorry. We did everything we could." And I thought, it's like right in the middle of our life. It felt like the middle. And all these plans we had, he was planning a trip for our 40th in a year and all that, and Bud was gone. And everything, almost everything, changed.
I get to kind of hang out with you most days, and I've known you as being someone who's full of joy. I've known you as someone who loves God. He's at the center of your life. I also know you as someone who believes deeply in the power of prayer. Here's my question, and this is kind of the question that I think a lot of us have right now. How do you still believe all of that stuff? Like, you even started that story with talking about how, like, God is faithful. You use that phrase. I'm like, how have you still been able to know God and believe in God and believe in prayer after everything you've gone through?
Well, I think the reality is the only time you're ever disappointed in anyone or anything is if you have an expectation of what it's supposed to be. So if my expectation is that other people's husbands die, or other people's husbands or families face tragedy, but not mine, because somehow, because God loves me, I'm in this special category, and that I don't really live life as a full-on human being. I just kind of float above the earth a little bit because I'm his favorite, and it's kind of that thing. And so when something bad happens, we get shocked and like, why me? And and the beauty is when you're an institution, you've lived through a lot of seasons of life, and through so much stuff, I'll call it, I realize that life will continue to happen. The one thing that never changes is God's faithfulness. And so for me, while it was so shocking, and the beauty is when you hit really hard tragedies, part of it is that you really are kind of insulated. The shock does that. In kind of a good way, I felt like I was kind of wrapped in cotton a little bit because I couldn't think clearly, and that was a good thing at first. It's very surreal, like sitting there with my kids around a table talking about what to do with Bud's body. I mean, there are things like that that make no sense. And someone at church, well, I have to tell you this story. This is the best. I called Mark, who was on vacation, Mark Pickrell, who one of our pastors, because he's a very dear friend of ours and stuff, and he and Arlene were down at their beach house. And so I called him about 6 in the morning, and Arlene answered the phone, and I said, our buddy died. And she goes, what, Kat? Pick. And I could hear her say as he was coming toward the phone, buddy died. And so Mark gets on the phone, and he goes, Kat, are you sure? And so, yeah, he's a pastor. He knows what to say. And so, but the reason I tell you that story is that in the midst, I mean, this was only within 3 hours of Buddy's death. And what happened was that Mark was perfectly Mark. He just was a human being. I had people who just said they were so sorry, and it was really lovely in that thing, but sitting and talking about what to do with Bud's body and then going through his papers and our papers and insurance and things like that, it was so surreal. But what I found was that every single day, somewhere God showed up. One time it's when I was probably a week after Buddy died, I was laying on my bed crying. Figured when I felt like crying, I'd cry. When I felt like laughing, I'd laugh. And so I didn't laugh a lot, but later. And so I was laying in my bed crying, and all of a sudden I realized that I was smiling as I cried. And I thought, what is that? And I realized that Buddy and I, as I said, have been married 39 years. In the first 10 or 15, we had some really dark seasons. Really dark seasons. And God, who's so kind, just walked with us. And if you're a math major, you know that if you multiply two negatives, it equals a positive. Two stupid people do not make a smart marriage. And so you can't carry that over. And Buddy and I had just, we didn't know what we were doing, and so we mucked it up a lot. But God had been so faithful in bringing us to this point. And so as I was laying across my bed crying, and then I realized I was smiling, I had the deepest sense of gratitude that I was crying for Bud. Because there was a time in our life when I would have only felt guilty could I have been relieved. And I know that sounds awful, but that's my humanity. And yet, because God had restored, here I was, and I realized all that God had done. And that it's been July 10th of this year, it'll be 5 years since Buddy died. And over that time, I never would have wanted that. Like, if I were going to build a ministry on something, I've been on staff almost 25 years here at CA. If I were going to build a ministry, I'd have built it on the fact that I'm incredibly spiritual, I'm smart, and really good looking. That's what I would build a ministry on. God, however, the things that have opened doors and relationship for me are the fact that as a child, I grew up with great poverty. I was sexually abused, had an alcoholic father and grandfather. I mean, that part of my story, and the fact that my marriage was really rough for years, and God was kind and faithful to hold us. That's not what I would have opted for. But my prayers have been sometimes ludicrous. And I remember during the dark days with Bud, I remember at night I'd go to bed and I just said, God, would you take me in my sleep? I can't do this anymore. I can't keep pretending. I can't do this. I was so tired of crying and life was so dark. And fortunately, God didn't answer that prayer. And I've gotten to see my kids and my grandkids raised and stuff like that because God had better options than that. He didn't answer that prayer. Some prayers took years and years. I asked him to heal my marriage and expected to wake up the next morning and Bud would finally be a woman of God that understood me, and it didn't happen. So, but instead, it's like learning really takes something. What I have found from the time I was young, I was about 4 when my mom came to Christ, to where now I'm an institution. And over all of that, see, life is going to happen. People are going to die. You're going to be disappointed. You'll run into financial trouble or broken hearts, broken minds, all of it. Life is going to happen whether God's a part of it or not. We decide whether we'll do it alone or we'll do it with the God who made us and trust that whether he answers our way. And there's a reason Isaiah says his ways are so far above our ways, his thoughts so far above our thoughts. It's because they are. And so for us, if you think that a faithful God has to explain it to you or do it your way, you will always be disappointed. But if you're willing to trust that he is good, whether it's through really challenging broken marriage or through sadness or through death or through financial stuff or broken dreams, if it's through being single and you don't want to be, infertility, or you actually have kids and think, what was I thinking, and that kind of thing. And it runs the gamut. It does. No matter what you're thinking, if you believe that God has not come through, then you misunderstand how the whole process works. And I think Josh, you did such an amazing job of talking about like that verse and what God is saying. And the reason Jesus says, like, when the Son of Man comes, will he find anyone faithful? It's because it's so easy to reject God, reject everything Jesus says, because he didn't do it your way. Well, you may think you're all that in a bag of chips, but I'm telling you, compared to the creator of the universe, all we can do is bend a knee and just say, Lord, help my unbelief.
Love you, honey. Oh.
And so tonight, I mean, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about prayer as a way of coming before God and saying, "This, I don't like this. I don't like where things are at. I don't like how things are happening. I don't like where I'm at. I don't like where this world's at." It's coming before him and saying, would you meet me here and teach me what it means to believe that you are good, that you love me, and that you are working all things together for good. And ultimately, our hope in that is based around Jesus. It has to be based around Jesus. We know and believe in that God because we know and believe in the crucifixion and in the resurrection. As Jesus was crucified, the weight of sin, of all of our sins, of the brokenness and pain and the horror of this world was placed on him. He died for us. In that we see his love. In that we see that even in this terrible event that's happening, that God's plan of love is still happening to reconcile humanity to him. And then in the resurrection, we see his power, that Jesus doesn't just stay dead, that he rises again, that he conquers death. He conquers fear. He conquers shame. When we pray, we're placing our hope in that God.